the jump button. Fans of hip-hop, rock, electronic, classical, jazz, and more will find something they like, I guarantee it. So tune in Saturdays 8 to midnight right here on WHFR.FM for the jump button with me, Rob with two B's, and a whole gallery full of peanuts. You'll like it. Seriously.
The 5101 Restaurant is Henry Ford Community College's innovative on-campus dining experience. The restaurant is operated by students and staff of HFCC's Hospitality Studies program and offers a learning experience for the students combined with a delicious and affordable meal for you. The 5101 is open Tuesday through Thursday from 11:15 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Wednesday and Thursday evenings from 6 p.m. to 7:45. Reservations are suggested and can be made at 313-206-5101. That's 313-206-5101. See you soon at HFCC's 5101 Restaurant.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views of the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. And before we get started today, I'd like to mention the fact that today's show marks the fifth anniversary of We Are Not Alone. And we've done 60 shows in the past 5 years, and even won an award along the way, he said humbly. And so I want to thank WHFR for giving me a platform to present the evidence of the UFO phenomenon, as well as our knowledgeable guests over the years for sharing their insights and evidence, and especially much thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in on your radios and your computers, and allowing us to share that evidence with you. We wouldn't be here without you. So thank you very much. And now to our guest today. Last September, Peter Robbins gave an outstanding presentation on the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident right here at Henry Ford Community College. Peter is one of the best known and most respected investigator writers and speakers with regard to the study of UFOs and their implications. He's been involved in this field for more than 30 years as a researcher, investigator, writer, lecturer, activist, and author. He's a regular fixture on radio shows around the country and has also appeared as a guest on and been consultant to numerous television shows and documentaries. He's also the co-author of the British bestseller Left at East Gate, a first-hand account of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, its cover-up and investigation. And it's my pleasure to welcome him back to the show. Welcome back, Peter.
Hi, David. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you again. You made quite an impression when you were here in September, six short months ago.
Well, I've got to tell you, I do a lot of talks around the country, but my visit to Dearborn and the surrounding area, and my talk there, my meetings with you and my friends with Michigan MUFON really were very special. I had a great time in short, from beginning to end, and what a wonderfully knowledgeable audience it was as well.
Well, we certainly enjoyed having you. Had a lot of fun and learned a lot of things. I know you also gave a speech in Flint the next day at the MUFON meeting.
I did.
And very, very interesting.
And I learned an awful lot more than I knew about Henry Ford on my visit, I'll tell you that.
Did you? Yeah, you stopped at the Greenfield Village.
Exactly.
Boy.
It was fascinating to me. I'm an amateur historian, and the museum and the village were really just fascinating, and so I just felt like a little human sponge, like a school kid soaking it all in.
Yeah. Did you see the little bike shop where the Wright brothers?
Oh, the works, yeah. It was amazing.
And it's all?
Thomas Edison's workshop, though, that gave me the chills. You think about the stuff that happened there that's affected all of our lives.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, it has. So, so let's get on the subject of UFOs, shall we?
Why not?
After all, this is called We Are Not Alone, not What Happened Yesterday. But, indeed, what did happen yesterday? 30 years ago, Rendlesham Forest incident occurred, and there was an anniversary conference in the UK.
Yes.
In December. Tell us about that. What happened?
Well, I will. And again, I got involved in this story almost 23 years ago when I met my then future co-author, Larry Warren, and we ended up spending 9 years working on this book. I had no idea what I was getting myself involved in, frankly, and had you asked me 5-7 years along in the process, I think I would have cursed my fate, but I'm just so proud of what we were able to accomplish, and very proud of that book. And as you've said, 30 years ago in late December was in fact the 30 years ago. This past December was the 30th anniversary.
Right.
And I had planned on returning to the area anyway to see friends and kind of pay my respects. And toward the last minute, in any case, with a few months lead time, two wonderful local guys in Suffolk, East Anglia, where this event happened, and I should kind of locate this for your audience first, the events in question took place over three consecutive nights in late December 1980 and involved everything from sightings to landings to what we feel were abductions to the appearance of craft and a presence with one of them. It was an extraordinary series of events, and if anything, the prelude to something that captured my imagination even more, which was what was done and what to a number of the key witnesses, what they were put through by elements of American intelligence community. That was absolutely unconscionable to...
What were they put through?
Well, they, in the words of the deputy base commander, they were meddled with. Some of them chemically, some of them hypnotically, some both. Several of the men involved remember getting injections, which we conjecture were probably sodium pentothal or a drug like that. My co-author was sprayed full in the face with an aerosol, the next night. It's impossible, even if we could just devote an hour to this, to even get close to a sweep of the story, and then was taken against his will and held and put through a series of events to appease his memories. And I think I can say with good educated speculation that similar things happened to a number of the other key witnesses.
Okay.
To, in one sense, put the fear of God into them. They did not want these men talking about this.
Okay, now, for the benefit of our listeners, you know, we're kind of a step ahead of what we're doing. So tell us briefly what happened that brought all this, shall we say, torture about.
Well, again, they had all observed aspects of a genuinely anomalous... landing in some cases, appearance of craft in other, beams of light being fired down into a highly secured weapons storage area, and from what we understand, adversely affecting the ordnance. One in a series of events that are very well documented now by honorably retired military personnel and good researchers, where nuclear weapons have been involved, or nukes per se. But none of the men really were quite ever the same. And the 30th anniversary conference centered not so much around my co-author Larry Warren, who was involved in the third night and arguably the most dramatic of these events, but the two key first night witnesses, who were law enforcement, Air Force law enforcement personnel, very serious guys, Jim Peniston and John Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and John's story was fascinating to all of us, and it's been out there for years. They observed a light go down in the woods on the very first night and radioed in for permission to investigate because it was off the base. In fact, nothing about that light going down suggested a crash or any kind of catastrophic event. There was no concussion, explosion, fire, but it's a highly secured series of NATO bases in the area, and it's the Cold War, and in they went. Mm-hmm. And ultimately had to leave the vehicle, made their way down into a deeper part of the forest where they came upon a machine, 7 or 9 feet on a side, triangular, tapering upwards, looking almost like black glass sitting on a kind of assembly. And they walked up to it. They noticed that it had markings on it. Peniston copied the markings into his book. One of them touched it. They have partial memories from this. And ultimately, they were the two keynote speakers. And this audience, David, I have to tell you, I've never spoken before a more knowledgeable or emotional audience. We had about 400 people in the Woodbridge Community Building.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about 70, 80 miles northeast of London. It's not in some horribly remote area. And these people grew up with this story, as did many of their parents. And they were angry at the Americans for lying to them and angry at the British for lying to them. And the questions they threw at John and Jim, who were, of course, the centerpiece. It was myself, Linda Moulton Howe, and Nick Pope on our panel discussion as well. But John and Jim were the big deal. And I'll give you an example. At one point, they said to John, somebody said, John, is it true, as I've heard, that when you came upon this machine, you pulled your sidearm and went into a two-handed stance and pointed it at the craft? And John's answer was to the effect of, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's a real memory or one that was implanted in me, you know, shortly after. John, is it true that you jumped on the thing and it went about 30 feet with you on it before you let go? I don't know. I just don't know whether it's a real memory or something they put in my head. And when he was saying they, he wasn't referring to the other intelligences. He was referring to us, they. And finally, John, were you abducted? And John, who both of these guys are suffering from this, even 30 years later, there is still tremendous anxiety around it. I don't know. I don't know if I was or not. You could hear a pin drop.
Well, wouldn't it be?
We went for about almost 5.5 hours with a brief break. We were pretty tired. The weather was ferocious outside.
Mm-hmm.
And the evening ended with John saying, Jim, we know that we told you all that if anybody was interested, we'll take you out to that spot in the woods where we first saw it, and we can try to recreate it for you, but we sure many of you are tired. How many of you are still interested in going? And close to half the hands went up. And I have to tell you, I've been out to that spot many times over the past 20-odd years, but I've never walked down that road at midnight with more than 100 people and a film crew. And this will be the subject of a feature-length documentary later this year on John and Jim's experience in Rendlesham. Linda Howe has been working very closely with them and doing a very fine job. And
where will this documentary be?
I think it's scheduled for History Channel.
Okay.
I think it's going to be 2 hours, but I'm honestly not sure. So it might be Discovery. Let's all keep our ears to the ground on that.
We don't have a name for it, right?
No. And they had all signed non-disclosure agreements, so some of the questions were met with a certain amount of frustration by the audience because they had agreed to hold certain things or details about certain things for the documentary.
Right.
But I was very moved by it, very impressed by both of the guys, and frankly concerned because they are suffering, and many of us have seen them in regressive hypnosis in clips that they allow to be shown at conferences with their therapists, and they're suffering. Mm-hmm. They are frightened.
Wouldn't it be foolish on the part of our military or any government, military, what have you, to try to implant a memory of pulling a sidearm on the thing or jumping on the craft? Wouldn't it be, you know, counterproductive if they wanted to keep this a secret?
Well, that's a good question, Dave. Again, even after 23 years working and observing this case, I can make better guesses, more educated guesses than some folks. But in general, if you have an individual under military auspices who is involved in a decidedly anomalous event, and you want them not to speak about it, number one, it's a good idea to try to frighten them into not speaking about it. But if you are concerned that they might talk about it anyway, to just stir in other elements, some of them seemingly unrelated, some of them ridiculously sensational or theatrical sounding, so that if they ever did come forward, even they would be confused about what are the real memories and what are the false ones, and hopefully in the minds of the establishment, that might make them sound even more difficult to believe. Yes, in those two cases, I agree with you. And those are certainly things that could have happened and may well have happened. It is fascinating to try to speculate where the line is drawn. And in fact, in working with Larry Warren, who also has been gotten to and is the first to acknowledge that, there are certain key memories that we are not exactly sure what part of the memory, where things veer off, or if they veer off. So it has, if anything, that 30th anniversary conference, which I thought might offer a little bit of closure, it just reopened it up all the way. And as Larry said years ago in a British television documentary, this is one that's never going away. I can't think of a more important case or one with more power to break the back of the disbelievers if we could give a full presentation of what we know.
Right. Well, I can tell you firsthand, and I know how Larry feels. Not completely, because I didn't have that dramatic of an experience, but when you do have a close encounter, it is something you never, ever forget. And you say, I know what I saw. And,
that's the phrase.
Yeah, I know what I saw.
And there's no way around it. It changes you. And as you know, well, we've both met and spoken with and spent time with so many people who kind of count an event like this as their sort of personal BC and AD. Everything changes on that fulcrum.
Right. Now, have these witnesses from Rendlesham ever since that incident undergone hypnotic therapy?
Oh, yes. In fact, I was a witness to a regression I'll never forget when I was working with Bud, where he brought Larry back to not the night in question, but the night after.
Bud Hopkins.
Yes, exactly. And it was chilling and fascinating and moving in that, number one, I knew this guy in a certain way. Larry is a tough guy, and it was the one time in all the years I've known him as a writer and as a friend where I saw him as a frightened teenager.
Yeah.
And Jim and John have been going regularly to their therapists, who both work with hypnosis and have been under many times now, and on film as well. So this is being explored. In John's case, I know I last saw a clip at the National Press Club when we both spoke there last year, and he will not go through that allegorical, actual door, if you will, to see what is on the other side because he is too terrified.
Okay.
And this is a big guy. He's got to be 6'5", but mm-hmm. in those regressions, he is a frightened guy.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, anybody would be. But it would seem like under hypnosis, it would regression, I should say, that they'd be able to sort out what was the implanted memories and what was the actual memories.
Well, yes and no. In some cases, they've done just that. In mm-hmm. other cases like this, it is still too frightening mm-hmm. to take a look at what really happened.
Yeah.
Even in the safety of your therapist's office with a skilled practitioner, which says something about something.
Yeah, what do you think that does say about whoever it is or whatever it is that's causing these incursions?
Well, I can only say, again, for myself speculating here, that whatever it was, whether it was an abduction experience or something other, it was so frightening to that person at that time that even now, all these years later, they still, even in this most optimum state of safely looking at it decades after the fact, are still too frightened to do just that.
Even subconsciously.
Well, yeah. Which bespeaks a great deal about the level of anxiety involved. And I again, I'm only speculating here, but perhaps part of it is just, oh my God, if I open my eyes now and I see what's there, then I'll never be able to go back to this point of maybe it wasn't that.
Right.
And I don't want to let this go because that, whatever that is just too frightening to me.
So denial is the easiest route, huh?
Well, I don't think I'd be in much of a different spot.
No.
It's easy to talk heroics, but if for anybody that's been through this, and again, this is one step away from what we're used to dealing with in that the military aspect of it, you have a great deal more pressure on you, and hearing them speak and spending time with them gave me pause to think about the fact that Larry Warren left the service with an honorable discharge 6 months later and in major post-traumatic stress, was not adjusting well to civilian life, but at least was out there. And ultimately, 2 years after the fact, connected up with Larry Fawcett, an established UFO investigator at the time, and Connecticut police detective, not detective, but a lieutenant in the Coventry, Connecticut Police Department, and ultimately gave information that resulted in the release of a report on this and then became a public figure in it. And even though he was allowed to kind of hang in the wind for years and scream at the universe without getting much acknowledgement, he was able to cathart. John and Jim stayed in the service for another 20-odd years, and they were only able to talk quietly behind closed doors to each other through that period with little or no exception, and that's got to create a whole nother level of compression.
Right. I've got to take a short break here just to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here out of Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. And I am David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Mr. Peter Robbins, author of Left at East Gate, story of Rendlesham Forest, the UFO incident there in 1980. And Peter, you are also at the World Competitiveness Forum held in Saudi Arabia. Tell us about this.
Well, I wish. I wasn't there, but...
We weren't.
No. Two good friends and colleagues were, though. This had to be one of the most interesting events in many years in UFO studies, although on the surface it had nothing to do with it. But, you know, there are lots of folks in our field who are going off all the time about disclosure and, you know, how do we make this public. I don't think it's going to happen in any kind of scripted manner with the President of the United States going on television. I think that it's quietly happening behind the scenes, and this is the best example I've heard of in some time. To the point, in late December, the so-called Global Competitiveness Forum was held in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It's similar to the World Economic Forum, but it's a little more discreet and quiet. It's actually organized by the Saudi Royal Family's Investment Group, and it's under the patronage of the King of Saudi Arabia. One can imagine this is a fairly conservative group. And it involves the guests there, government ministers, and chief executive officers for some of the ranking corporations in the world, including at this one, Google, Disney, Reuters, Boeing, Rolls-Royce, Siemens, IBM, Ernst & Young, Volkswagen. I mean, world class. The two keynote speakers at this series of meetings were two fellows you may have heard of, a Mr. Tony Blair and a Mr. Bill Clinton. And obviously, a lot of this kind of event is given over to looking at economic trends and, you know, business future opportunities. The stuff most of us lay people can just imagine but not really be privy to. What made this year's so interesting for us, and I'm sure many of your listeners, is that three of the speakers were Jacques Vallée, a leading name in UFO investigative work, especially in the 70s through the 90s, and Nick Pope, formerly of the Ministry of Defense, and Stanton Friedman, retired nuclear physicist and as well-known a ufologist as exists anywhere in the world. These three men, and nobody was paid. Expenses were covered. Everybody was flown first class, put up very nicely, thank you. But they were not brought in as entertainment or to be made fun of. They were brought in to talk about what they know best. From the most conservative point, Nick discussed the SETI program and the implications of how it was affecting the way that we think about our place in the universe. Apparently, Jacques and Stan were much more hardcore and discussed extraterrestriality, the realities that we feel that we're dealing with, and some very informed speculation on the impact that disclosure or something approaching it will have on the world community, business and otherwise. In speaking with two out of three of these folks, that is Stanton Friedman and Nick Pope, I've learned that they were treated with respect, that you know, people were not grimacing or rolling their eyes or nudging each other and smiling during their talks. And at the level of the game that this audience is at, namely, they are chief executive officers of some of the most powerful corporations in the history of business. They were not interested as a novelty. They were interested, basically, of how the subject of We Are Not Alone is going to be affecting the world as we know it.
Okay.
Stan and Nick did stay around. They were asked interesting questions by the folks. I just thought, what a great place to be a bug on the wall, and how fascinating that there is apparently already such an awareness of this subject and enough of a serious one that, in so many words, the Saudi royal family, obviously one of the most powerful and conservative little operations on planet Earth, sponsoring this event, and this is the fifth year they've done this, would invite these three individuals to be part of their speakers lineup, along with the former Prime Minister and of England and of the United Kingdom and President of the United States.
Was Bill Clinton and Tony Blair present, do you know, present at the any of these speeches by the ufologists?
I don't know. I'll have to find that out for you, David. if they were, there was certainly no interaction on the subject.
Right.
And I think we can make educated speculation
that
these are two guys somewhat in the know on the subject.
Oh, yeah.
And again, Stan, who I saw a week and a half ago at a conference in Kansas, said that the mood in the room was extremely respectful. The panel session was entitled "Contact: Learning from Outer Space," and here we are having an event like this sponsored by the global powers in petrochemical industry, oil, who are probably most curious, among others of us, on the power sources.
Yeah, propulsion system, yeah.
It's something that could be a problem, or it could be an asset, depending on whether it's something that we human beings can master, own, and invest in, and make money off of.
I have been told that gasoline for all fossil fuel engines is a very small percentage of oil products is used in plastic and this, that, and the other.
Yes.
It's a very small percentage. I don't buy it. Do you?
I have no idea. I know we all know that, petrochemical industries involves plastic, other kinds of fuel, lubricants, et cetera.
Right.
But from the way that we've grown up in the last couple of decades, oil is king.
Yeah.
Oil being refined into gasoline, that is.
That's right.
And whoever controls that spigot, and the Saudis certainly have a big hand on it, controls a good part of the way things are, behind the scenes as well as in front of them, it seems.
But it also seems that there are a lot of people out there who have alternative energies. They say that the perpetual motion machine does not exist, but you know what? I've seen one. I've seen one, and if it wasn't for human intervention, that thing would still be going. And it's all magnets.
Gosh.
It's all magnets. A positive pulls a negative, and negative pushes the positive, and around and around and around it goes. And what's to stop it? What's to stop it unless you stop it? Because magnetism is magnetism. If that were the case, the solar system would fall apart. The galaxy would fall apart. The universe would fall apart because that's what it is. Tell me that's not perpetual motion?
It seems to be.
Yeah, really.
And, one only wonders if we were back in the early days of Henry Ford revolutionizing the world with his interesting little invention there in Dearborn. if he had an opportunity to develop this kind of power, which ultimately you couldn't really meter, you couldn't charge for refueling it if it was perpetual motion of some sort. It brings up all kinds of wonderful conspiratorial speculation about doing whatever possible to keep this knowledge from us. But of course, we're off on a bit of a tangent here.
That's
one
fine.
Thing that was interesting was one of the, also Michio Kaku, who's a very well-known physicist, also spoke there and was very well received. But there was a resident scholar, an Islamic scholar there, who, in response to the presentations, made a point of saying that the Quran did not prohibit any belief in life being elsewhere.
Right.
Which is a very interesting thought, no matter what else we may think of the world of Islam, that at least mainstream Islamic thinkers, if this is an accurate reflection, this would not be some horrific conflict for them.
No.
And we you don't know how it's going to be for the great Judeo-Christian mass here of us here in the West.
But, right, right.
I hope we have a chance to see.
Yeah. Well, you know, different religions are different about that. A lot of them say that these are demons or fallen angels, and well, fallen angels, where do the angels come from? You know, they come down from the sky. Are they fallen? Oh, no, they're from God. You know, you could go around like a dog chasing his tail.
I know. And so many people do. I was speaking to a friend in New Mexico earlier today, and we were talking about some of the differences in beliefs between more or less, let's call you and I mainstream in this field, that we approach the subject in a more or less historic, scientific, secular manner. And I've had a number of discussions and debates with Christian fundamentalist UFO researchers, who many of whom I like very much as individuals, but we just have no way of getting close on this issue, because for them, there is no literal reference to aliens or UFOs in the Old or New Testament. Therefore, there are no aliens or UFOs per se, and the ones that are real are demonic or satanic in origin. And that's all she wrote. They're not interested in debating the subject. It's just that's the way it is. And
now, isn't this an oxymoron? It must not exist, but for the ones that do exist, they're demonic.
Well, probably.
You tried to take the other side there, but you couldn't.
You know, I do.
I win.
It snaps you like a rubber band back after a while. We just absolutely disagree on this.
I had a guy tell me once dinosaurs didn't exist because they weren't talked about in the Bible.
Neither do submarines, telephones, or folding knives.
That's right.
Folding knives. And once again, that's something that is neither here nor there for them. It's just, my mind's made up. Don't
confuse me.
But you feel a fact.
Yeah, all right. That's right. That's right.
By the same token, where I think you probably find it as interesting as I do, that the Catholic Church has a very antithetical policy, which is, yes, they do feel that there is room for other intelligences, and that God could have made them the same way he made us.
Mm-hmm. They're all God's children.
And that we should be prepared for this, and that is what they are. They are not us. They are not, you know, mystical creatures. They are from parts unknown out there.
Do you think the reason the Vatican is coming forward with this, Balducci, and now I can't pronounce the other guy's name, but this astronomer, the Pope's astronomer,
yes,
are now coming forward and making these statements pro-UFO,
yes,
do you think that they see the handwriting on the wall, this is going to come forward, and we'd better be able to say, yeah, we told you that a while back, if you'll recall?
You know, David, this is a story I've followed, I think, closer to 15 years since I first heard a reference to it, which just blew my mind. And again, what we're talking about here is nothing less than the Vatican itself acknowledging that extraterrestriality is a very real possibility. I have a pet theory, and one of them, the basic one, is that Roman Catholicism is the only religion that has, as part of precepts that you follow to be a good Catholic, that you go to confession regularly. Now, of course, confession is it is held in confidence between you and your priest, but I think even anyone within the church would acknowledge that, you know, that priest might then feel it was important to discuss one of these confidences with somebody higher up within the church if it was warranted. And the same way it would work, you know, in therapy on a certain level, that your therapist might feel the necessity to discuss this with their therapist if it was something And wouldn't it be interesting if in the history of the abduction phenomena, and let's focus in on little quiet areas in the world, part of it in the third world, that, you know, somebody comes into their local parish priest and, you know, is just absolutely terrified and confused and reports something to that priest that we would interpret as an abduction experience.
Mm.
And that that kind of information was passed along, ultimately, to the Vatican, who, after a certain amount of credible, quote-unquote, cases had been collected, a certain working group made a decision. Of course, this is pure speculation, that, good Lord, it does sound like this may be what it purports to be. And if so, and we have other evidences, and, you know, we certainly have people within governments that have shared things with us discreetly, and, you know, we have stuff in the Vatican Library that is highly classified that leads us to believe, yes, we are now convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that we're not alone. Now, the question is, do we want to resist it, offer alternate theories, or make it, you know, mystical or demonic, or do we want to try to begin to prepare our flocks for this possibility by, as well as we can right now, acknowledging that, yes, this is a possibility, and that God's miracle, of course, you know, incorporates the whole firmament, and that life, perhaps not as we know it, but even more advanced on a certain level than us, comes and goes with impunity. I think it might be somewhere in there, frankly.
Yeah. In fact, that's exactly what happened with the Betty and Barney Hill case when it became public, the abduction of Betty and Barney Hill. Psychiatrists around the world started comparing notes because they had patients that would come in and claim the same thing, and they would diagnose them as schizophrenic. And then they said, well, gee, this is not just my patients. These are patients all over the world. This is happening all over the world.
And doesn't it make all the sense in the world that that would be the case?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, you bring up an important point, David, which is this September is the 50th anniversary of the Hill abduction.
Yeah.
And for any of your listeners that can and are able to attend conferences occasionally around the country, keep your ears to the ground for any talks that will be being done by my good friend and close colleague, Kathleen Marden. Kathleen is the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. And she is one of the finest speakers, investigators, writers, and people that we have in the field. I just can't say enough about her. Her presentations are absolutely riveting. There is no one that has researched the subject more fully than her and done it in a more ethical and scholarly way. And the book that she wrote with Stanton Friedman on the incident called Captured, I believe they're now working on a follow-up book, but I know that this is going to be a particularly busy autumn for her, specifically because of the 50th anniversary of the Hill case.
Very good. I have to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with author and researcher Mr. Peter Robbins. And we're talking about the Betty and Barney Hill case. Is the 50th anniversary coming up now? Is there any kind of a conference or lectures that are going to be held?
Yes. Okay. I know for a fact right now that I believe it's in September, but it might be a bit later in the year. I know Kathleen is going to be speaking in Leeds in England at a conference. I'm hoping that she will be joining us early September. I believe it's going to be September 3rd, if that's a Saturday, at the 3rd Annual Exeter, New Hampshire UFO Conference, which I've been a part of since it began. And also that month, she's going to be giving another talk in New Hampshire, specifically very close to the physical anniversary. I think she'll be speaking at the MUFON International Symposium, which usually takes place in July. And I'm as sure as, yes, she's also going to be back in Roswell, the the first week in July as part of the city's program of entertaining and educating folks about UFOs that goes under the banner of the Roswell UFO Festival and Symposium. So, and those are just the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. But I know that Kathleen has a website, so if you Google Kathleen Marden, M-A-R-D-E-N, I'm sure within a click or two you can get to the site and she'll have her schedule listed.
Okay. Also, a conference in Lawrence, Kansas. You mentioned this to me earlier.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, that was something else. This took place just earlier this month. In fact, it was the 18th, 19th, and 20th of March. Lawrence, Kansas is a name that had stuck in my mind from old history classes because the Civil War, arguably, on a certain level, began in Kansas many years before the first shots were fired on Fort Sumter. So-called Bloody Kansas, the fight between the pro-slave residents and the abolitionists, took quite a few lives at that time, and Lawrence was the center of it. And this was, I think, maybe the second time in my life that I was part of a conference that was organized by one person, aided by another person, who just wanted to do the thing and who found the money or saved the money and just put it on. And it was just a very humbling reminder that individuals can change history. In this case, it was a wonderful guy named Daniel Leung. And Daniel and his partner put their own money forward and brought in, I think it was 14 speakers, put us all up in a wonderful historic hotel, and it was 2.5 days of terrific lectures and PowerPoint presentations, a lot of great discussions. We all ended up on the Sunday afternoon saying, boy, we sure hope that there's a way that other people will come forward. Maybe Kansas MUFON will be able to help, or individuals will do some fundraising, because we don't have much like that going on in the Midwest. I'm not even familiar with the previous Kansas UFO conference, but no matter what, we'll all remember it. And some of the speakers included Sam Maranto, maybe not the best known ufologist, but I adore Sam. He is Chicago's number one guy, and he did a tremendous talk on the O'Hare airport case a few years ago and some other ones. Bryce Zabel. Bryce is a real entertainment business visionary who years ago was the guy behind a television show that had almost a cult-level following. It lasted for one season. It was called Dark Skies.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. It basically dealt with MJ-12, the UFO cover-up, and the Kennedy assassination. And it's now out on DVD, and I can't wait to see it again. Bryce wrote a book that was published late last year, along with our own Richard Dolan, called A.D., After Disclosure.
Right. We had Richard on the show.
Yeah. And Richard actually is right now either in the air or on his way to Amsterdam. That guy has never been busier. He really is one of our best assets right now.
Yes.
But it's just a match that was made somewhere between Hollywood and Alpha Centauri. Two of them together are a wonderful team, and Bryce did a terrific lecture. Stan Friedman took another look at Roswell. Jesse Marcel Jr., bless his heart, was there with his personal account of Roswell. Don Schmidt, who I haven't seen in some years and who for me is one of the greatest Roswell researchers of all time. In fact, the book that he wrote with Tom Carey, Witness to Roswell, is absolutely chilling. They're the two who focus in on actual witness accounts, and nobody has done better work than those two on it. And he did a wonderful talk on Roswell as well.
Here comes another plug.
Yep.
Don Schmidt was on the show.
Hey! we had two very different views on the abduction.
Really?
The first from Kim Carlsberg, who whose experiences overwhelmingly have been very positive. And the second from Butch Wachowski. Butch has a UFO research organization based in Pennsylvania, his home state. He has a background as a police officer, state trooper, an investigator. And he did a talk on casework that he has been developing on human as opposed to animal mutilation involved in abduction, which was very chilling.
Yeah, I guess.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley, one of our great all-round scholars, did a fascinating talk on the UFO subject from the point of view of fundamentalist Islam. A speaker that I had been waiting for some years to meet and hear, and one of the greatest guys I've ever met, Robert Salas, who was involved in 1967 UFO nuclear intervention at Malmstrom Air Force Base as a young Air Force pilot. Absolutely riveting presentation. Also, there were two of us on the bill speaking about the Rendlesham incident, myself and Colonel Charles Hault, the former deputy base commander. Also, absolutely fascinating, and I thought he did a wonderful job talking about the case as he knew it from his own experience and didn't try to characterize other people's experiences. We've certainly had our disagreements, and we addressed them in part in our separate talks, but I thought it was a terrific presentation. Another speaker who I'd been looking forward to meeting for years is Florida-based Frank Freschino Jr., and he wrote a book called Shoot Them Down about the order to shoot down UFOs that came out of the Truman White House in 1952.
I shouldn't say it, should I? Had him on the show.
Love it. You are one step ahead. One of the, again, I you know, some in some cases, God knows you don't get paid much in this field, but you meet wonderful people, and occasionally you're lucky enough to meet a colleague whose work you have admired for years, and then you meet him, and it's like, gee, you know, I read your book, and I thought it was great, and it's like it's a friend that you had that you didn't know about. Rich Dolan and Stephen Bassett kind of brought the whole thing to a head, and both did their usual terrific presentations. And there were just so many, a great audience, some wonderful touches. I think I sent you one of the photos. The organizers leased two circa 1935 huge Hollywood premiere type gas-operated floodlights, trailer-mounted, that, you know, shot beams that you could see for miles into the sky that were rotating around in the evening once it got dark.
I bet they got UFO sighting reports, didn't they?
Well, not that I'm aware of, but nothing would surprise me less. It was billed as the UFO Summit. It was held at Liberty Hall in Lawrence, Kansas, and you can go to the OZUFO.com website to get some more information on what went down, and I was just very, very pleased to be included in it. We don't know if we'll see it again, but it was a great conference.
Well, that sounds great. We only got about five more minutes, but I did want to touch on this terrible disaster in Japan.
They
claim could be some bogus footage and photos, but they claim they were seeing UFOs before, during, and after the earthquake, the tsunami, and now circling around the nuclear plants that have been disabled. What do you know about that? Anything?
Well, I've gotten the same reports that you have, Dave, and as recently as yesterday, I was in touch with colleagues in Japan who, even though they are deeply involved in the UFO subject right now, are more involved in getting their lives together and doing what they can for less fortunate fellow citizens. If this turns out to be false, no big deal. You can do anything on film with Photoshop or what have you. If it turns out to be true, nothing would surprise me less. Of course, these other intelligences would and should be interested in such events. Mm. And there is a history relative to the nuclear aspect that should, well, I mean, a lot of folks that hear about Roswell don't know or don't connect up the fact that the 509th atomic bomb wing, which was housed at the Roswell Army Airfield there in 47, at the time was the only nuclear strike force in the world.
Right.
The Enola Gay left from Hangar 84 in Roswell on its way to pick up its bomb and head for Japan and end World War II in great part. The fact that there were UFOs sighted over the Indian Point nuclear generator during the great East Coast blackout, I know through police officers that I knew at the time who had colleagues who observed them. Whether or not they were over Manhattan on 9/11, I've heard, I've seen photos, I don't know if they're real. My attention that day as a resident of Manhattan was not paying attention to that stuff. I had more pressing things on my mind. Mm. But I hope we can get something definitive on this. It, again, it would not surprise me, but our hearts go out to our fellow human beings and friends in Japan.
Yes, indeed.
And we hope that things get no worse than they are now.
Yeah. And briefly, on we were going to discuss the videos of the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. You've seen those videos?
Well, I have, and I read your very fine editorial on it, and I've gone back and forth originally because, again, I have to be a skeptic being an advocate for the subject.
Right.
And at the same time, in part through your good reporting and studying some of these images as carefully as I can, and the preponderance of individuals who don't seem connected in any way, the video shot in different parts of Greater Jerusalem, I have to conclude that it is authentic, and how fascinating is that?
Really?
Choose one of the most loaded little pieces of real estate in the entire Western civilization, Eastern too, for that matter, and stage an event there? Well, how about that?
And we were talking earlier about the Orthodox religions factor. The Dome of the Rock has religious value to Christians, the Jews, and Muslims.
You bet.
So, you know, really, is Jesus coming back? Is Muhammad coming back?
We're treading very close to blasphemy for some people here.
Yeah, I know, but
there is that great Chinese statement, "May you live in interesting times," which is not necessarily a blessing.
No.
We live in all too interesting times
right now.
And this is just one more little brick in this very interesting wall.
Right. It is. It is, for sure. So you saw the video of the webcam over Jerusalem.
Yeah, how about
Weather cam.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, triangulation was one of the most important techniques I was taught as a young investigator by one of my mentors, who was a tough, no-nonsense New York City police detective who also happened to be a crack UFO investigator. And the idea there was, if you can get a statement that is supported by physical evidence, that is backed up by a history of events or the individual involved, in other words, do what you can to pin the event down, and nothing could be more literal than having footage from independent, you know, civilian camera people in six different parts of the city shooting the same thing from different angles, like the great Mexico City overflights of 99 and 2000, and then have it, you know, with that weather cam. At a certain point, your logical mind really has to say, hang on, what is going on here? And, you know, the idea of a hoax begins to really lose its ability to hold you away from looking at it as a truly phenomenological event.
Yeah. Mr. Peter Robbins, I want to thank you so much for joining us again today.
Mr. Twitchell, a pleasure and an honor. I look forward to my next visit to your show, and
Hope
always a pleasure
soon.
Being on the air with you and in person.
Thank you very much. You have a good evening.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all of the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's home site. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today and making this a very successful anniversary show. So please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Remember the adage, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? An associate degree in fitness leadership is like having a bird in the hand and two in the bush. First, the Associate of Arts degree in fitness leadership prepares one to be an instructor or trainer in fitness clubs, corporate fitness centers, public recreation facilities, and hospitals. Secondly, it provides an excellent foundation for students entering other careers such as nursing, physical therapy, community health, and business. Henry Ford Community College has an excellent credit transfer agreement with Wayne State University and Eastern Michigan University. A graduate then would enter the job market with not one, but two areas of competence and expertise. For more information, contact Carol Sloan at 313-845-6318. 313-845-6318.
Think you have what it takes? We do. Henry Ford Community College. Visit us online at hfcc.edu.
This is an official station of the MAEB. The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming, but most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
Arthur C. Clarke once observed, "Two possibilities exist. Either we are alone in the universe, or we are not. Both are equally terrifying." Join your host, David Twitchell, the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when he and special guests examine the scientific evidence on We Are Not Alone, right here on WHFR.FM 89.3. That's the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m.